12021 Old St. Augustine Road, 1 mile south of I-295. Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day, with the goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is also heard on these 3 stations in Jacksonville, Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and Brunswick, Georgia. Now there's a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. Your help is needed to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is crucial to take the next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com or to send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted that you've joined us today. We look forward to your dialogue and discussion on the issue. We're talking about uncovering corruption. Do you believe that Donald Trump is doing the right thing? Do you believe that President Trump has the Do you believe that President Trump has the authority to appoint someone like Elon Musk and others to carry out his bidding, to do the checking that he wants them to do in relationship to discovering what is taking place with the waste, fraud, and abuse? The president can't himself personally go inspect the records, but he has those that has the ability, the knowledge, and the know-how to be able to carry it out. That's what he's done with Elon Musk. Just as I mentioned just before the top of the news just a moment ago, Valerie Jarrett was the chief executive administrator for Barack Obama. Valerie Jarrett was a proud, known, professing, verbal communist. And yet she was elevated to that position, and most of what Obama did as far as his policies and the plans and his procedures were set forth by Valerie Jarrett. You didn't hear any screaming and crying from the Republicans, unfortunately. You didn't hear any screaming and crying that our suits being filed against Barack Obama as a result of it. And yet because President Trump is doing what President Trump said he would do while he was the candidate running for office and told we the people that that's what he would do. Now he's doing it, and it's called President Trump 2.0, and as a result of that, they're trying to file enough suits to block him, stop him, and to deter him from carrying out the task. Here's some of the things that's been discovered. Look at the headline, mind-blowing. Trump and Musk find people 150 years old still receiving Social Security. Let me read that again in case you misunderstood it. Mind-blowing. Trump and Musk find people 150 years old still receiving Social Security payments. The article reads, in part, Elon Musk joined President Trump in the Oval Office on Tuesday to discuss mind-blowing amounts of fraud and abuse they're discovering through the deep dives of the DOG, including people 150 years of old age receiving Social Security. Quote, we had no idea that we were going to find this much, Trump said. We've already found billions of dollars of abuse, incompetence, and corruption. Could be close to $1 trillion that we're going to find. Musk explained, quote, I watched that, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. It was right fascinating to watch Elon Musk with his little toddler son standing at his feet as he's in the Oval Office, and he's answering questions impromptu from the group of reporters there in the Oval Office. But here's what Elon Musk said. We do find it sort of rather odd that there are quite a few people in the bureaucracy who have ostensibly a salary of a few hundred thousand dollars, but somehow managed to accrue tens of millions of dollars in net worth while they were in that position, which is what happened at USAID, end quote. Quote, we're just curious as to where it came from. Maybe it was very good investing, in which case we should take their investment advice, perhaps. But there seems to be mysteriously that they get this wealth. We do not know how, why. Where does it come from? Quote, I think the reality is that they're getting wealthy at taxpayers' expense. That's the honest truth of it. It's mind-blowing, Musk continued. We are really just talking about adding common sense and controls that should be present and should have already been present. Then Musk says, that's the crazy, here's the crazy thing, he said. Like just curiosity examination of Social Security. We've got people in there that are 150 years old. Now, do you know anybody that's 150 years old? I don't think so. That should be in the Guinness Book of Records. They're missing out somehow. So that is the case. Like, I think that probably dead is my, they're probably dead is my guess. Or they should be very famous. One of the two. And then a whole bunch of Social Security payments where there's no identifying information. Why is there no identifying information? Musk also said terrorists have been funded by U.S. tax dollars. Quote, we're talking about terrorist organizations. We're talking about known fraudsters, known aspects of waste. No things that do not match any congressional appropriations. Musk also said millions of dollars in fraudulent spending were discovered going to foreigners that ought not to be receiving taxpayer dollars. That's just part of it. They've gone through several agencies, several departments, and they're uncovering fraud, waste, and abuse on a massive billions and billions and billions of dollars scale, ladies and gentlemen. And yet the Democrats are pulling their hair out, dancing in the streets, cursing God, cursing Trump, cursing Elon Musk, and threatening them rather than jumping on board and saying, let's find the fraud waste. Let's stop the fraud and waste and abuse. No, it's because, as it was alluded to by Elon Musk, many of these people, if not most of them, went into office with a few thousand dollars. In just a few years, they're worth tens of millions of dollars, and Elon Musk said, where did he get it from? Maybe it was good investment. If it was, we need to take some of their investment advice. Of course, he was saying that in a pun because he knows what's happening. Here's an article. Defending USAID is political suicide for the Democrats. Once again, the party shows it has learned nothing from November the 5th elections. In policy terms, the Democrats have a point. The legality of DOJ's strike on the agency is unclear. For the incredible amount of wasteful stuff in the budget, why did USAID get $1.5 million for diversity, equity, and inclusion included in the funding? USAID is a 10,000-employee bureaucracy housed in a palatial building on prime downtown real estate that spends $40 billion a year on other countries and not on America. I could go on and on, ladies and gentlemen. The bottom line is, we're uncovering corruption. And with that uncovering of corruption, there's a major, major attempt by the socialist Marxists on the left to stop the uncovering of corruption. They're attempting to do so by lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. Here's a headline. Gross insubordination. FEMA workers fired for spending, for sending $59 million to luxury hotels in New York City. Four workers at the Federal Emergency Management Agency are being fired for unilaterally sending a massive $59 million payment for hotels in New York City to house illegal aliens. The egregious payment came after about they decided to go about circumventing the leadership on the issue of payments of federal monies to sanctuary cities. According to Fox News, the firing came after Elon Musk explained on the social media DOJ team just discovered FEMA had sent $59 million just last week to luxury hotels in New York City to house the illegal immigrants. The report explained that FEMA works with Customs and Border Control to dispense money to the shelters and service programs which provide housing and other benefits for illegals released in the United States. This was an exploding program under Joe Biden's administration, which allowed millions upon millions of illegal aliens to cross into America over the open borders. President Trump already has instituted a number of programs to change the crackdown on the illegal immigration. Of the 59.3 million, 19 million for direct hotel costs, while the balance funding services such as food and security. According to New York City Hall, the funds were not part of the disaster relief. These funds have been misappropriated going back to the Biden administration and New York City as a sanctuary city. It has been wasting billions of dollars of taxpayer money to provide free housing, free clothing, free food, free education, free health care for the illegal immigrants, including criminal aliens that are here illegally, charged Mike Lawler, Republican, New York. Ladies and gentlemen, that's part of the fraud and abuse. You would think that there would be rejoicing in, across both aisles for that to take place. Here's an article that says federal agencies accused of thumbing their nose at Trump's directive. A federal agent has been accused of thumbing the nose at President Trump's instructions to shut down the racist DEI program and Joe Biden installed throughout the federal agencies. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms that is accused of changing an employee title from chief diversity officer to senior executive in order to get around Trump's orders to shut down the race-based programs and put those workers on leave. The ATF ordered to place DEI workers on leave instead of giving the DEI officers a new title. They attack citizens' rights, ignore leadership, and act as though they are above the law. Enough is enough. Time to abolish the ATF, Trump said. So here's the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen. The bottom line is this. What would happen, and I'm looking at a headline, has this title. What would happen if the president defies court orders? Now here's the bottom line. Here's where we've been going. Here's what I want us to analyze. By the way, that telephone number is 904-831-0917. 904-831-0917. If we've got three branches of government, and it's designed by our founders to have tension between the three branches so that we follow the line with our constitutional republic with the representative form of government. Is it possible, ladies and gentlemen, that we've witnessed the deterioration of the three branches with tension between each so that there will be a right track of all three branches following the constitutional republic rather than it being into the hands of one party or another party or one branch or another branch? So the question this writer puts, what would happen if a president defies the court order? With lawyers gearing up for the challenge of President Trump on every turn and give Trump's temperament and lack of conventionality, it seems possible he may try to defy court orders with which he disagrees. That's the writer's opinion now. During the initial battle over Trump's executive order banning refugees and other immigrants over the weekend, reports came out that numerous border agents were defying the federal court order and said, let immigrants be detained at multiple airports in interest to the country. The question becomes, what would happen if Mr. Trump decided to encourage federal employees to defy a court order? McConnell, this person says, this is writer, not Mitch McConnell. Another name, Michael McConnell, director of constitutional law at Stanford Law School, said presidents have tried to get around court orders in the past, but it hasn't happened in a long time. He pointed to President Abraham Lincoln refusing to comply with the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in the Civil War when it decided the president did not have the authority to order that a man accused of treason, Maryland state legislator and militia lieutenant John Merryman, be held without trial. Ladies and gentlemen, there are several cases down through the years where there have been those that have said, well, we're not going to obey the order. Now, listen very carefully. Time won't allow us to go into the minute details of it, as would be wonderful. But when the Supreme Court issues what we call a ruling, it is not, hear me, it is not, N-O-T, law. Hear me. Supreme Court issues what's called Supreme Court opinions. It was Andrew Jackson when the Supreme Court issued an opinion. Andrew Jackson's response was, it was an opinion against what he was doing. Andrew Jackson's response was, that's your opinion. That is not my opinion. We're not going to adhere to it. Ladies and gentlemen, a Supreme Court opinion is not, hear me, is not law. We have deteriorated in our society that somehow, some way, we feel as citizens, when the Supreme Court makes a ruling, that we've got to bow, bend, and absolutely lick the boots of the black robe judges and say that they're right. They're not always right. Roe versus Wade, which allowed about 73 million human beings to be murdered in the mother's womb, was law based on the Supreme Court's opinion 50 years ago. That opinion was overturned, and it was egregious to recognize that the new Supreme Court ruled that it was not constitutional. Yet we were told for 50 years that it was constitutional, that a woman had a constitutional right to murder the baby in the womb. Hear me. I'm concerned that we are watching the denigration of the three branches of government in the Constitutional Republic and allowing our nation to be ruled by justices in black robes that are going to overthrow, and prevent the executive branch for having its authority based on the when you look at the Constitution, with the executive branch, that is the president, and the authority that the president has, he has the authority to shut down these federal agencies. He has the authority to have someone come in and investigate and examine the books. He has the authority to hire and fire those that he feels are not doing the jobs in the federal government agencies, et cetera, et cetera. And yet we have those that are trying to nibble at that authority with case after case after case being sued. And by the way, most of these suits that are being filed from the left, the Socialist Marxist Communist Party called the Democrats, they're searching out one of the appellate divisions, and it's in the Division 1, the Appeals Court 1, not 9, 10, 11, 12, but in 1, where they're finding judges, and it was discovered in Circuit 1 that all of the judges in that appeals district, all of the judges are liberal Democrats that are against President Trump, that voted against Trump, that were for other Democratic Party people. They're against President Trump. So they're making a ruling. So since when can we have our Constitution totally upended by a local judge or an appeals, federal appeals court judge out there in Timbuktu someplace that makes the decision how the nation's going to be run? I think it's egregious for anybody to think that that should be the case. I'm looking at the headline, retired federal judge doesn't see much, hear me, this is a headline, retired federal judge doesn't see much that the courts can do to stop Trump's actions. On Monday, U.S. District Judge John McConnell Jr. said that Trump administration had violated his order to unfreeze federal spending, despite a temporary restraining order issued last month blocking administration's efforts to pause payments for the grants and other federal programs. The White House has said that a review of the federal funding is necessary to ensure that spending aligns with the president's agenda, but also stated that the officials are acting in good faith to interpret the court's ruling and quickly resume any affected funding. The case is one of many lawsuits challenging Trump's executive actions and their legal limits. But the question is whether the judge can do anything to stop an administration once it has breached its constitutional limitations. The judge is basically saying that there's a limitation to the constitutional levity and the leverage that a president has in the executive office. But yet there's a understanding partially. By the way, I've read about 10, 15 different articles on this subject trying to determine can the Supreme Court opinion override the Oval Office executive branch if the president is following the rules, the regulations, the guidelines, and the authority that is given by the Constitution. Can a Supreme Court justice pass an opinion? You remember with Joe Biden, he wanted to forgive all of the student loan debt. He started doing so. Suit was filed. Supreme Court said, you can't do that. What did Joe Biden do? He paused it for a couple of weeks, went back to doing the same thing, just reworded a few things, started reducing and removing student debts again. The third time, second or third time, Supreme Court said you can't. Joe Biden kept on doing it. And during that period of time, hundreds of millions of dollars of student debts were forgiven, student loans forgiven. I believe Biden, in his demented position, and those handlers recognized and realized that the Supreme Court is not God. The Supreme Court renders an opinion. The Supreme Court cannot undermine, cancel, and in any way bifurcate the responsibility and the authority based on the Constitution for the President of the United States of America. I'm looking at the bottom line in this article. What happens if a president decides to just ignore a court ruling? The court, a judge has said, has tools available to him or her in the first instance. They can cite the parties in front of them for contempt. They can impose fines. Of course, since one of the parties, arguably here Elon Musk, is not clear that fines would have any make any difference to him. There's even possibility of imprisoning someone until the order is followed. All of these are obviously empty threats with respect to the defendants in this case. The marshals would have to, that's the U.S. marshals, would have to enforce whatever orders the judge enters. The problem is that the marshal service is under the Department of Justice, and if Trump wanted to fully not comply, he could direct the Justice Department simply not to comply. Ladies and gentlemen, our founding fathers have built in the mechanisms that gives the president the authority to carry out what his responsibilities and authorities are as delineated in the U.S. Constitution and not set by some phony, false, black robe judge that wants to some way control what is taking place in the president's office. I'm looking at another headline. Can the president lawfully ignore a Supreme Court decision? Conservative legal pundits take aim at the judiciary supremacy. This article reads in part, the power of the constitutional interpretation is not exclusively vested in the courts, with all other branches and offices of government bound to accept unthinkably and reflexively whatever the court decides. As an antidote to judicial supremacy, this person defends what he calls the priority of executive and congressional non-acquiescence in judicial precedents, that in the independent judgment of these other actors conflict with the Constitution, end quote. In other words, the rendered decision is that when it comes about with some group or some black robe judge or some person or party wants to file suit based on their presidential opinion, it is that where they're prejudicial against it, that they cannot, the president is not to acquiesce and simply bow to that. Quote, we live in a legal culture besotted by the myth of judicial supremacy. According to this myth, the Constitution means whatever five Supreme Court justices claim it means. And all of the governmental actors are duty-bound to abide by the supposed meaning. The president is not duty-bound to abide by the Supreme Court if the president's own readings of the Constitution contradicts the court's unwelcomed orders, end quote. Let me read that again. According to this myth, the Constitution means whatever five Supreme Court justices claim it means, and all other government actors are duty-bound to abide by that supposed meaning. The president is not bound to abide by the Supreme Court if the president's own readings of the Constitution contradicts the court's unwelcome orders. Further, the article states, the framers' idea of a written constitution to check the branches' tendency to wrongfully argue their power of an independent judiciary to keep the political branches within their constitutional boundaries. The courts, Hamilton wrote, were designed to be an intermediary body between the people and the legislature in order, among other things, to keep the latter within the limits assigned to its authority. To say the least, the Supreme Court won't be able to serve as much of a bulwark in a regime characterized by executive and congressional non-acquiescence, the Supreme Court's ruling. Georgetown law professor says what concerned the framers most was not the existence of judicial power or nullification, but likely the weakness of the judiciary in holding the line. May I say, ladies and gentlemen, the long and short of it is, and I've got 10, 15 articles, 5 to 10 pages each, that argue against what is taking place today with the courts trying to decide what the president should do. Look at another headline. Most of the headlines read similar, but different writers. Can the president ignore an order from the U.S. Supreme Court? Article reads, this article, this week, Arnold Lowry and Charles Munster debate whether the president has the power to ignore an order from the U.S. Supreme Court. It's the former litigation attorney of the Ronald Reagan and George Bush presidential administrations who has offices in Lubbock, Texas, Munster, number one, they call it. Our topic is the president or any chief executive, that matter, that can defy the Supreme Court. The beginning of the inquiry starts with the portrait of Andrew Jackson, our seventh president, which hangs famously in the notoriously, depending on the presidential position, president's desk in the Oval Office in the Supreme Court. It goes on to talk about what had taken place with Andrew Jackson. His position was, that's your opinion, it's not our opinion, we're not going to abide by it. Ladies and gentlemen, may I say, we're in what very rapidly could become a constitutional crisis. In that rapid approaching constitutional crisis, the bottom line, the question that I want to leave with you today, does President Trump has the authority to carry out what the Constitution requires him to do and gives him the levity, the leverage, and the privilege to do, or do the courts have the final decision on what he can and cannot do? If the president is following the Constitution, can the courts intervene, intercede, and squelch the president's authority and tie his hands so that he cannot carry out what the Constitution demands that he do? That's the question. And I pray that, ladies and gentlemen, in the future, very near future, that that question will be answered through the system. Because what we're going to see take place, it must happen, is to take the 2022-25 cases, combine them, and have them on a rush inquiry to the U.S. Supreme Court. If that takes place in that fashion, and if the Supreme Court gives urgency to the question, the Supreme Court must rule that the president has the authority to do exactly what he's doing, or else we will shred our U.S. Constitution. It behooves us as Christians to pray, to seek God's face, ask God to heal our land. It behooves us as Christians to be salt that God has said that we're to be, and light that God has charged us with the responsibility of being. Salt and light in this society is needful and necessary. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening today, and continue to pray, seek God's face, ask God to heal our land. God bless you. Be looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295, FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with First Conservative Baptist Church. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for